welcome to this week's edition of the Video News Endscreen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from Endscreen Media joins me this week. Hi, Colin.
Hey, Will. I'm back from Amsterdam, back in sunny Sunnyvale, where it is gratefully not raining, which it did a lot in Amsterdam. It's good to be back here. But we have a great discussion today because we have a special guest. This stems from, I know our listeners already know we talked about Disney and the fact that Disney is delivering a new SVOD service, but not for a couple of years. And that sort of sparked our decision to grab a new guest. So why don't you tell us how that happened, Will?
Yeah, so first of all, just want to say hello and welcome David Tice, who is the SVP of Consulting at GfK, which is a global market research company. Hi, David.
Hi, Will. Hi, Colin.
Hey, David.
Thanks very much for joining us today, David. We're pleased to have you on. And as Colin just said, a little bit of background for our listeners. Several weeks ago, I had written a piece about Disney's forthcoming SVOD service, which certainly has gained a lot of visibility since it was announced. It's not going to launch, as Colin said, for a couple of years, but the big news there is that they're pulling their programming from Netflix and going to be launching their own. And they've really talked, Bob Iger, their CEO, has talked about it being a real treasure trove of programming. And that, I think, raised an important question of how exactly is Disney going to price this service? And I wrote a piece about some of the considerations that they would have for both pricing it high and also for pricing it relatively low. You then read that and then responded saying that you had actually just done some research on perceived value of the big three SVOD services, which would certainly be, I think, a critical consideration for Disney to be looking at in pricing its own. And that led us to thinking it would be fun to have you on the podcast to share with our listeners some of your research highlights, and then we'll talk broadly about what it all means for Disney.
Okay, that sounds great.
So get us started by just sharing some of the highlights, Dave.
Sure. So, so I saw your piece, and I wanted to shared with you some of the findings from a report we did called Over the Top TV. Which we have done at GfK. This is the eighth year in a row we've done it, so we get some interesting trends in there. And one of the things that we asked about is something we've asked over the last 3 years, is we talked to regular users of Netflix, Amazon Prime, and Hulu, and we've asked them, what is the maximum you would pay for each one of those services, the ones that they use? So it kind of is an interesting way to kind of get an idea of what, you know, actual current users, what their perception of the value of each of those services is. And what we've shown is that it's really over those little over three years that we've asked that question, it's remained in a pretty close range between about $9.50 and $10.50 a month for any one of those services. And it hasn't changed really. So it kind of shows that, you know, people seem to have something in their heads that, you know, maybe $11 is the maximum they would pay each month for any one of these types of SVOD services. And, you know, that kind of plays into, you know, things like Disney or other SVOD services that are coming along, how they're going to price things. Because we also have seen another interesting finding we had was that the number of SVOD, you know, and Netflix, let's take Netflix for example, the number of Netflix users who have an Amazon Prime or a Hulu video account has doubled over the last 3 years. So people not only, you know, are, you know, they're using more services, but they have to pay for those services. So how does that also squeeze, you know, people's available budgets? You know, if they're paying, you know, $10 a month for Netflix, do they have a budget to pay $10 for Amazon Prime, $10 for Hulu, another $10 for Disney? I mean, at some point, people's wallets will only stretch so far. So that's that's, sort of a couple of really important points I thought were relevant to the Disney issue and the piece that you had written.
So, David, just following up there with a question that comes right to mind when you talk about the perceived value remaining in a relatively tight range over these 3 years. Over the course of those 3 years, of course, Netflix, Amazon, and Hulu have invested literally billions of dollars in developing original content. I think a strong argument could be made, for instance, that the Netflix service today is dramatically different than it was 3 years ago in terms of both the number and quality of originals that they've added to the service. So what's your take on how to interpret the fact that despite those billions in investments, the perceived value and what they're willing to pay, what subscribers are willing to pay, has not really budged very much?
Yeah, it's an interesting trend. So Netflix has always been the most valuable of the three. So they were sort of had a head start anyway. But as you mentioned, they compared with 3 years ago, I think they've curated their older, their catalog content a little bit. They've added the new originals. But what we've seen is like the price is a wash. I mean, it's only increased a couple of percent over those 3 years. So it doesn't seem to have added a lot of value, but hasn't taken away either. And, I think that might tie into with some of the other findings we've had in other reports on Netflix, which is the thing people love the most about Netflix is the choice, and what people dislike the most is the choice, right? They love what they can see, but then they always say, well, but I want to watch this and I can't find it on Netflix. Mm-hmm. So Netflix always seems to be caught between those two things. Amazon Prime, we did see the largest increase, and I think you could argue they probably have made the biggest change over the last 3 years, with their addition of their originals. I think that's gotten them a little bit more traction since they didn't really have a lot to start with. I mean, a lot of original content. And then Hulu, Hulu's pretty much, the same as it was 3 years ago. Maybe, they've added another network or two to their roster. Then this study was really done before Handmaid's Tale became such a big hit. So we might see the effect of the Handmaid's Tale play out, if we ask these questions again next year.
One of the things that's actually really surprising to me, David, is how linear, really Netflix, the price that people say they're willing to pay hasn't changed. But the price of Netflix has changed. So I think it was in May that Netflix actually, May 2014, that Netflix raised the price from $8 to $10 or $7.99 to $9.99 for the base package. And that's right in that area where, you asked in April 2014 and people were still saying $10.40. I'm really surprised that would be the case. Any idea why it's just not varying, even though the actually underlying cost of the services have been?
I think it's just, they're pricing it to what the demand is, right? So they did have a pretty good, they had a fair stretch between what they were charging and what they, what people would be willing to pay. So I think they're taking advantage of that. It's not in these data, but a couple of, 2 years ago or 2014, 3 years ago, when we did this study, we also had Hulu, the free version of Hulu in there. And the people who only use free Hulu, I believe they would have been willing to pay $6 or $7 a month to get what they were getting for free. So you could see it totally made sense for Hulu, when they switched over to a totally paid service, I think it was last year, that made sense because they, their clientele were willing to, pony up, a fair amount of money to get what they had been getting for free.
So David, just picking up on a point that you made earlier in terms of not just thinking about the perceived value of the individual services, but also how subscribers, people might think about subscribing to multiple services. You were sort of making the point, if I heard you correctly, that you think there's a kind of a perceived cap that a lot of people may have in terms of how much they'd be willing to spend. We have seen some research elsewhere suggesting that the number of people subscribing to multiple SVOD services seems to be increasing. So curious to get your take a little bit more on this idea of how your research figures in with the subscribers going for multiple subscriptions.
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely seen that trend. I think I mentioned earlier, I mean, we saw at least people with Netflix, you know, doubled the proportion of Netflix people doubled who had at least a second or a third SVOD service. So people are getting multiple services. I think it all feeds into that it's just becoming a lot easier and people are becoming much more accustomed to using these types of services. I think also the expansion in smart TVs or TVs that are, you know, hooked up to the internet in some manner, I think that's made it a lot more appealing to people as well. And then also, like I said, you know, one of the people's complaint about Netflix is they can't find this or that. Well, they've figured out that, you know, they need to subscribe to HBO to get Game of Thrones, or they need to subscribe to Amazon Prime to watch Bosch, or they need to get Hulu to watch Seinfeld or whatever. And people are much more willing to make those, you know, to get those multiple subscriptions to get the content they want. Now, the question is, like, I mentioned a little earlier, is, you know, that's going to take an increasing share of their wallet, and how far is that going to stretch?
So one of the things that that is really interesting here is that actually a couple of these services, well, in particular Hulu is one of the primary services, but there's others doing this as well, like CBS All Access, is they're actually providing an ability to buy out of the ads. So, and generally that's $4. So I think it's Hulu, you pay $4 and you get out of the ads, and CBS All Access, you do the same. I'm just wondering how much flexibility do they have with these types of approaches, and are consumers taking them?
I, you know, from everything that we've seen, it's a very small proportion of consumers who are taking advantage of the ad-free. You know, there are people out there who just will not sit through an ad, and they want to, you know, they're willing to pay for it. But in a lot of work that we've done that goes back a lot of years with a lot of different types of media, you know, we found that an overwhelming proportion of people, you know, they just will not be willing to pay to get rid of ads. And if you flip it around, if people are willing, you know, if you ask people if they're willing to sit through an ad to get free or reduced price content, you'll find that you know, majority of people are willing to do that. So while people don't like ads and, you know, they complain about them a lot, when it comes down to actually, you know, putting money on the table to get rid of them, I think you only will find a small percentage are willing to do that.
So, David, let's shift the topic a little bit. We said at the outset that what got us connected here was talking about the Disney service and how they should price it. And I think, again, as I mentioned earlier, Bob Iger has talked about it being a, quote, very, very rich treasure trove of high-quality branded content that's going to be included. The entire output of the Disney studio, plus Pixar and Marvel, 4 to 5 original live-action movies exclusively for the service, a library of 400 to 500 films, 4 to 5 original Disney-branded TV series, and 3 to 4 TV movies per year, 7,000 episodes of Disney-branded TV, including recent seasons of Disney Channel, but not including in-season episodes, plus thousands of shorts. And the kitchen sink will probably be thrown in there somewhere as well. you know, facetiousness aside, that is a pretty amazing lineup of content that Disney plans to put in there. you're talking about there being this, you're talking about your research about perceived maximum value. Disney, again, is going to be very tempted, I think, to price on the high side. We see HBO now still at $15 per month, although with relatively modest penetration. So given what Disney is looking to do here and given your research, any advice that you would give them about how they should think about where, what price would be optimal to target?
Well, I certainly think if anyone can be successful with, you know, something like this, it's certainly Disney. I mean, with their lineup, like you mentioned, with their catalog, the Disney catalog and Marvel and Pixar and Lucasfilm and everything else, they certainly have the deepest bench. I think a couple of the questions are, you know, for them to consider or things to think about are, you know, how exclusive are, you know, the, sort of like the catalog movies, I guess. You know, will I still be able to watch every Star Wars movie on USA or TNT or something? Or are they going to start pulling back on that a little to make, you know, to make this service the only place you can watch some of this really high demand content? I think the fact that a lot of it's addressed to kids is in their benefit, because parents are always willing to pay a little bit more to make sure Junior's happy. Mm-hmm. And especially if they come up with a really, you know, a slick interface that's going to work on mobile devices. So, you know, parents can be able to use this in the car or in the restaurant or somewhere else. I wish I had all those devices when my son was that old. It was just up to me to keep him entertained. I think they certainly have a lot of things playing in their favor. But again, I think it comes back to people having, you know, they have a sort of a flexible budget for video or for entertainment, but it's only going to stretch so far. And, you know, if we've seen people, you know, let's say, you know, right now people are feeling like, okay, $10 or $11 doesn't matter. You know, we can spend that on Netflix or whatever. But it does seem people's attitudes change once it's 13, 14, 15. All of a sudden, $15 in people's minds, you know, the way consumers work is a lot different than $10 a month. So I think what they have to do when they do come out with a price is make sure it's supported by the interface that they have, and by the content and exclusivity of that content.
I mean, it sure sounds like they're not talking about a $10 service here, doesn't it? I feel like they're mixing and matching a lot of stuff that maybe they should be thinking about bifurcating the service instead of just throwing it all in one place. Why wouldn't they do a kids service at $10 or $8 and an adult service with the with the Marvel stuff and some of the more adult content at $10, and then offer them at a discount if you get both? It seems to me like there's an opportunity to do that, right?
Yeah, I mean, that certainly would have been one way to approach it. I don't know all the details about Disney Life, the pilot service
in the UK, right?
In the UK.
Yep.
I mean, if that had been an overwhelming success, I'm sure we would have heard a lot more about it. The fact that people barely know about it is probably indicative of something. But, you know, hopefully that's given them a little bit of practice in the field, as it were, that could give them some insights to make this successful. And they also have the ESPN services coming out too. That's a third leg, right, that they could have offered adult, children, and sports. So they're almost embarrassed by their riches, I guess. They have so much to deal with.
Yeah,
it makes things more difficult.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, my take on them, the path you described, is that the kids category is now so competitive. And again, we've seen big investments by the big three SVOD services. We've seen kids-oriented cable TV networks lose on average half their audience over the last 5 years, according to recent research that I saw. I think Disney, if they came in with kids only, that service might not achieve very much traction. So they, I interpret it as they feel like they sort of need to throw everything against the wall and come out as heavy and hard as they can.
Now, you could be right, but the thing I'm worried about for them with this service is, you know, listening to David and his analysis, is how much room there really is for them to maneuver here, because they sure don't sound like they're talking about a $10 service. But as David said, you know, a lot of the air has been sucked out of the market by just three vendors, Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon. And how much room do they have next to those services, you know, to introduce another service that's, well, let's speculate, but maybe between $15 and $20. That's a big, you know, David, you'd agree, right? That's a high price to come in at, but it could well be where they're thinking.
Yeah, I mean, it could be the case where, you know, they'd rather have lower subscriber numbers, but at a higher, right, at a higher value, rather than making a mass market play. And, you know, another thing to consider too is, like, unlike Netflix, they also have to keep in mind they got to keep all their cable and satellite affiliates happy.
You bet.
You know, and that's another, you know, aspect they have to consider.
And that's been a big driver, arguably, behind HBO now still hanging out at $15 rather than them being
right.
Yeah, I wonder. Did you ask your customers, or do you have any thoughts on the 10-year thing? The fact that they're only ever asked to subscribe to 1 month, they can leave whenever they want. Because I'm wondering if Disney is going to try and pull something there where they only offer 3 or 6 month subscriptions or something to try and lock people in.
That would be a smart thing to do. I mean, we obviously see a lot of churn with some people, you know, particularly for the HBOs or Netflix. People come in for the shows they want to watch, the series, and stick around long enough to see them, and then they'll drop off and, you know, not subscribe again for a few months till something else they like. So, I mean, ideally, you want to keep that roster of new programs and engaging series going all year round to keep people interested.
Well, David, we're just about out of time. It's a pretty interesting position that Disney finds itself in for lots of the reasons that we've been talking about here. Your research feels extremely relevant to me and seems like it would be pretty relevant to the Disney decision makers. They're still a couple of years away from actually launching this service, but I got to believe they're thinking hard and probably doing some of their own research about price sensitivity for prospective subscribers. So this has really been valuable.
Well, thanks. I'm glad I could share it with you and your listeners.
Yeah, it's a fascinating study. It sounds to me like Disney need to get that report. And boy, Will, wouldn't you love to be a fly on the wall in those discussions?
No doubt it's pretty contentious. Well, that's about all the time we have for today. So, David, again, thanks very much for joining us. We'll include a link to the blog post that you did highlighting some of this great research. Colin, great conversation as always. And thanks to our listeners for joining us once again.